It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Blindly Obvious, it's clear as can.
The Blindly Obvious podcast is for information and entertainment purposes only. All views expressed on this show do not constitute professional advice. We make no representation or warranties regarding the accuracy, completeness, or applicability of the content we express. These are merely our opinions, and as such, we encourage everyone to form your own opinions.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff, and today we are on the topic of conversation of pop heard around the world. Now, of course, that's to play reference to the famous historical event that, you know, nowadays with the more restrictive algorithmic languages, you got to avoid those, you know, those trigger words. Jeff?
What's that saying? There are decades when nothing happens, and there are days when decades happen.
All right, yeah. I think it's years when decades happen, but yeah, I get your point.
What, did I say it wrong? How did I say it?
I think it's there are decades when nothing happens and years when decades happen.
I meant days.
But you're right.
The last week has been rough for a lot of people. You know, I know we live in the greatest nation in the world, and in our judicial system, everyone is innocent till proven guilty. But man, you know, I was listening to somebody at church Sunday, and they said, you know, two families lost a son.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
And it's like, yeah, man.
That's tough. Not only that, one of the families, and you know, you're going to have the people out here who say, well, who cares? But you put yourself in this man's shoes too. This dad has to reach out to his pastor and say, hey man, what do we do?
Yeah.
Could you imagine that?
Oh, I did. I sat there.
Oh my goodness.
And I tried to put myself.
How tough would that, seriously? How tough would that be?
In that community.
Clearly you feel terrible about what's happened, right? But you're giving over your own son. Like, just imagine. That's tough.
Yeah.
But it's exactly right.
Two
families did lose a son.
Yeah.
Because regardless of what happens to the young man that's still alive currently, his life's over.
I feel so sorry for...
Who won here?
Both families.
No one won.
No.
Nobody
won. Well, the devil. I think the devil is having a celebratory party, man. He is having a heyday. And
that,
listen, anybody...
People along with him.
Anybody celebrating this, you are in league with the dark one. You are. You don't know it, but you are. Maybe you do know it, but some of you, I think you just don't know. You are playing the devil's sandbox.
Now, do you think, in regards to that, have all of us been in this sandbox? I know we've all been in the sandbox.
I know,
but
I have.
But in regards to celebrations of things that when you look back in hindsight, you would go,
oh man, I'm ashamed.
Why on earth would I ever condone or be a part of such a thing?
I have such shame for things I used to think were great. I'm so embarrassed today.
Mm, same here.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that I was given a chance to change.
Same here.
Yeah.
And I think... if we're going to give Charlie credit for anything, right, it's got to be that he literally was the salt and the light example that is in our Bible, is of our God, and he wholeheartedly obviously believed in, right? Because he was willing to apply what he had learned out in practice.
Well, that was the whole driver of the name of his organization he started, Turning Point. It was all about, hey, this is a pivot point. You know, this conversation can lead to a more important decision, and that's where you get to turn to Jesus Christ.
And that's, you know, that's, I guess, what I would kind of present here is, for as dark as this clearly is, right? In Romans, what is that? Chapter 8, I think, verse 28, it says God uses
all things
mm-hmm. according, you know, to those who are called to his purpose. And doesn't that give us just an amazing hope that, like, the potential beauty that could come from this, that seems so dark, and how could anything good possibly happen from such a dark day, that we're told actually quite the opposite? And not only that, the guy that this happened to was a literal shining example of that.
Let me be Tyler today. Let me throw you in in the responsive reactionary seat. You know, you get to,
it's not the seat I sit in.
Yeah.
You can't stir the pot from the seat of reaction.
No, I get to be the pot stirrer. I got a ginormous wooden spoon.
Doesn't the Bible tell us not to do that?
No, I'm not. You're not flipping the script here, man. No. Nope.
Oh, all right. I was gonna say it's cool if I do it, but if you're doing it, come on.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so let me try and frame this for you. Everyone by this point has heard something about the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And what I want you to do is, and everyone out there in podcast land, instead of trying to be an armchair quarterback where you bear no responsibility for outcome, because this is where we get in trouble.
But you know how the game could have gone better?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to tell everybody, this is what you should do, and this would fix everything. You need a giant Band-Aid with lots of little bacitration, and you got to stop eating. Okay, well,
you're talking like Captain Hindsight.
I don't even know who that is. Okay.
Well, it's like Captain Hindsight. Everybody comes in after a situation happens. Yes. Then you're like, hey.
That's funny.
Well, if the person wasn't sitting in that chair, they wouldn't have ever been shot.
So it's the chair's fault. The chair. See, it's the plastic.
Imagine if he wasn't sitting there.
All right. Let's assume, pretend, fabricate in our mind that for the rest of our discussion today, the suspect they have in custody is either the person or a person responsible for the murder of Charlie. You or I are the governor of Utah, and we have the burden and privilege to go and share our plan to try and unite and bring healing to our nation. What are you going to say?
Oh, I got to take over? Well, it depends. Who am I getting my script from?
No, yeah. See, I knew you were going to... You're gonna pull it all cut.
Oh yeah,
pull all that stuff out.
Well, you're asking me to be a politician.
I'm saying,
who's paying me the most money for the best narrative?
Ooh, you are still you, and you are not owned by anybody.
Oh man, and I'm the governor.
Yeah, and you're the governor. You get to.
This don't sound likely.
Influence policy, shape culture, perspective, understandings. You have a unique opportunity right now to either make this better or make it worse.
What am I going to do?
What are you going to do?
Resign. No, I think, our answer of what we can do to make it better, if you take away the painting, the lack thereof context that was painted about Charlie Kirk in the media, as far as like, you know, he was painted to look in one direction this way, and then maybe in the other direction he's painted to look a little more that way. When if you actually listen to what he has to say, his core first message was bringing people back to a personal relationship with God, softening hearts. And that's the issue here, right? It's a heart issue. It's not Charlie's just the victim of another one of these situations, but it's not like it's uncommon anymore, which is unfortunate to say. We're used to, this is just normal now. And then, which creates the argument of, we need to take weapons away, but that's only going to take them away from good people. The people who are going to commit these acts are going to obtain the resources to do so until they're held accountable for doing it, to send the message that, hey, we're no longer going to tolerate, and I don't care what side of the fence you're on, anyone being publicly assassinated should not be tolerated. We shouldn't go for that, right?
Right.
So we're going to bring this person to a fair trial, hold them accountable, and bring them to justice. And what I guess what I may agree with in terms of, I'm not necessarily a pro-death penalty guy, but if that's what the people in this state do want, and that's what the jury of peers do vote for, then I think that should be upheld. That's the American justice system working properly, right?
I want to ask you a question since you got on that, just for a sidestep. So which trumps what the people want or what God has said?
Well, I would go with what God has said. Also, though, understanding that at this point in time in our country, you're going to be at an uphill argument in that position because everyone else is thinking what they would say matters most.
Oh, I think that across human history, short of a very small span of time, like 1776, maybe that year, there's been very little concern by mankind for what God has said. For the most part, we just disregard it. Yeah.
What does God say on this issue?
Purge the evil from among you. If a man sheds man's blood, by a man's hands his blood shall be shed. It's one of the first rulings God made after Cain killed his brother. But because that law had not yet been established, Cain was permitted to live with a mark on his head and no one was to kill him. But from that point on, the death penalty was instituted by God. It's in Genesis.
So it's
reinstated over and over and over again. It was never canceled or removed. In fact, in Romans, it tells you that the government, the governing authorities that now are in place are messengers of God who are there to punish evil and reward good. And it says, they don't bear the sword for nothing, and swords aren't for peanut butter and jelly.
That's fair. So it's almost saying, obviously, when you're holding a position of authority, you may need to use this sword at times, but you should use it sparingly, right?
Capital punishment is for the most heinous crimes, and there are very few crimes that are worse than murder. By the way, murder and killing are not the same. And so you are to put that person to death. That's not you. When you put a murderer to death, yes, you killed him, but you did not murder him. You gave him justice.
That's fair. Okay.
Today, we mingle the words. In fact, even in the Bible, if you look at our translations, they kind of morph those word killing and murder together, and they are not the same meaning.
Well, because I was going to say, that gets down the slippery slope of, let's say someone is driving home after a night of drinking, they've had too many drinks, and they get in a car accident, and did they murder someone else, or did they kill them?
Well, what they ultimately showed was,
they've clearly made a poor choice.
My momentary happiness is more important than the person's life that's passing me on the road. And while I did not mean to kill them, I engaged in behavior that made it far more likely that I would kill somebody. Yes, I believe it is murder. It's unintentional. You know what it is? It's a kissing cousin to the problem that we have today. You have people who have the rights to do certain things who feel no responsibility for outcome.
Sure. Well, but I think it's because we blur these lines, right? Because another example I'd give you, what if you had...
Whose lines are we blurring? That's what I'm getting to.
God's lines are ultimately... Right. I feel like God's standards are then mimicked and in some ways mocked by the examples that we as man set up in society, right? Like all of our societal constructs are based upon God's standards, but not all of our societal constructs actually align with those standards.
Yeah, great point. We went shopping. We saw God's commandments. We saw the virtues and principles, the character he's trying to build in all of us. Rather than take it as it was given, we shop. We went shopping in the great warehouse store God had provided.
Sure.
And we pick and choose. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, it's easy to point at another group of people that are doing it, but I think if we evaluate ourselves, we all do this, don't
Absolutely.
We?
Absolutely.
Don't we?
Yeah.
And we all go, man, I don't... We all selectively shop for what's convenient and fits into what we believe, right?
I think so. I think we love being consumers.
But what an example as for why we just can't live that way in society. Because if we all believe our way is best, we can't all be right. It's not possible. Yeah, it's literally not possible.
You just tipped on something that I thought of this morning. I've been just hashing this out in my mind over and over and over again. You know, we've heard many repeat the mantra, and they weren't wrong, that our diversity is our strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can be true. It can also not be true. And let me explain. It can be true if in the diverse groups that make up America, for example, as long as each group still values the other groups, as long as each group still loves the people of the other groups, your diversity can be a strength. As long as the virtue that ties them together is love.
Sure.
I think he got a recipe that will be strength.
Almost like a true picture of what New York looked like back in the day, right?
There was a time,
Like when all the immigrants came through. You can still see the remnants today of, you know, you've got Chinatown there, you've got Little Italy, all these different cultures blended into one melting pot.
Valued.
And
valued,
all of
right?
these people shared the same common core values, mm-hmm. and then brought the elements of their cultures here to America. So they still supported God, family, and country, and then brought the elements of their culture here with it.
Yeah, those...
That's what was awesome.
Well, those immigrants also did integrate with America. They weren't trying to change America or
Correct.
Its ideals. They were trying to be Americans, all the while still having their own unique mm-hmm. cultural signature. And it was beautiful because there was a shared love for each culture, each group.
And then everybody here got a little bit of a taste in some capacity of each culture.
Right. And it was beautiful. And that's where I can hear some on the Democrat side saying, you know, diversity is our strength. And some Republicans are going, I don't know about that. The reason why some Republicans are saying that is because, and if you're just trying to understand both sides, that's what I'm trying to do here, is the time where diversity is not going to be your strength is, okay, so everyone's got their tribe and everyone's got their mantra and everyone's got their own values, their own culture. They're trying to not just keep, but protect from the others who they perceive as a threat, who are going to try and change something they can't let go of.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden they don't see the other groups as something to be valued or loved. They see them as the enemy who's trying to take something that they love away from them.
Sure.
Here's where diversity really gets us in trouble. If what each of these groups have in common is a common hate for all others and only a love for self, what do you have?
Nothing.
A civil war.
Well, yeah, that's true.
You have created all the ingredients needed to ensure they go to war.
It's certainly pushed and encouraged, right?
Here's probably the scariest part about this to me, as I was processing all this, trying to, again, step in the shoes that I'm governor or I'm president. How do I, because I feel I shoulder some of that felt responsibility as a leader in our community. And I'm like, okay, so if this happened here and I was asked in my lane in ministry, how do I bring everyone together? And I felt that weight. What would I say? And I was putting you in the hot seat. I put myself in the hot seat, and it's like, man, how do you fix this? Because if this is the guy, because we don't know. But if this is, you know, and all that stuff, and you look at how it was done, that one man made an entire nation hit pause. Do you realize that? Mm-hmm. It didn't take a 30%, you know, or a 51% majority or some other little minority. It took an individual to make the entire nation hit pause. Just process that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
The power of a single individual for good or for evil.
Now, do you think that was in the act itself or in the virality of the internet and that things can just be in front of people's faces immediately?
The reason it went viral was because it was so sensational.
Oh, sure.
We're at a place.
I mean, you'd literally just watch somebody get murdered in 4K.
Right. That was the goal. He didn't choose a private park or him sitting in his car when no one's around. He wanted it to be there when cameras were on him. Like, all of this was intentional. It appears there were people with previous knowledge it was coming. Did you see that in social media? They were bragging, oh, you wait till tomorrow.
That's why I was saying, I got to say, I wonder from who that was coming from, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. We are in a scary place because I would argue we're no longer in that New York City composite that you talked about where, oh, it's Chinatown. Oh, it's the Italians and they got their pizza and lasagna and everyone's loving and appreciating the different diversities of their area.
But I want to pause you real quick before you carry on. How much back and forth was going on back then too?
I don't know.
That isn't talking. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Was there some back and forth infighting when the societies were merging together in the first place? Or was it just peace, love, and harmony?
All I'm saying is the way we just captured this was that there was an affection and appreciation of love.
Sure.
And we're saying in an ideal world, we should be striving for that.
Amen. Yes.
But is that where we live? No. The simple answer is no.
No.
We more resemble the tribalism of each individual group who loves what their tribe represents and hates the others that they see as a threat.
At any cost.
That's what we just crossed the threshold. And listen, we are making a lot of these very quickly. We're reaching something that I'm terrified of, and I'm building a case here. What was once thought unconscionable by the vast majority, if not everybody, like, you wouldn't do that. And now you've got people who not only are willing to do it, but you got a cheering section for it.
Which is just, the more that gets spotlighted attention, only going to encourage more happening.
Right. And so, but understand, this is a microcosm of bigger things. Like, this isn't it. Okay. We all remember the Einstein quote where he said something about, you know, with, I don't know what weapons will be used in World War III, but I know what weapons will be used in World War IV. Sticks and stones. And also, we don't even know what's going to start it, but we know this. If we ever go to World War III, because of the weapons that will be used, those who survive are going back to Stone Age. We're saying it's a point of no return. We're going to hit a place. What's the word? Tipping points? I feel such an urgency not to play armchair quarterback. Would you say Captain, what was it?
Captain Hindsight.
Captain Hindsight. But I think we need to sit here honestly and look at the landscape, because I think we can all agree what's not going to fix this is just us being optimistic.
Yeah, probably not.
Optimism, while it's a wonderful trait and virtue, it's not going to be the medicine that brings us back from this sickness, this infection that we have. Whatever course of action that we decide to take, we better get this one right. Because I don't know how many do-overs we're going to get. Like, we're reaching such a place of consequence where people are doing the inconceivable, where people are seeing acts that were never an option, saying, I'd consider that.
Let me ask you this now, to the contrary of that.
Okay.
Seeing how we are very like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of, more so me than you, a lot of theater out here, right? Very theatrical. I'm going to throw a what if at you here. What if this was theatrical? Would you throw that in the same category? In reference to like people doing unimaginable or unconscionable things to push forward an agenda or create a reaction. Would you put this in that if it were to come out that this thing was theatrical?
I understand where you're going with that. And I think it would be naive for me to say that this one person was all by himself and had no impact, influence, or any. And I'm not even going to speculate on who that could be. I don't care. It doesn't matter at this point.
100%.
But
regardless, I'm not going to say we're not ever going to know, but we don't know right now.
I am certain he was not alone in the thinking and the planning of what he did. I believe there were influences on his life that are far reaching. I believe that it is a common practice of our politicians and world leaders to give us solutions for the problems they create. And that's what you're getting at, and I understand. And I don't even want to go there, because what I want us to see is, here's what's scary. If this young man had been not so impulsive and had waited and been more strategic and been more like, I don't know, a world leader way back in the 30s and rose to power, and got to a place where he began to dictate law and policy and practice, and could not just take out one person, but take out an entire group that he wanted to demonize. He could have done that. The guy had the intellect. The guy was not, the guy was incredibly smart.
Yeah, definitely seemed to be pretty smart.
There are such people in power, and they are steering nations. They're steering this world. In fact, if you read the Bible, it tells you a day when a man will come, a lawless one, In other words, a man who doesn't even shop in God's store for policy and virtue and laws, right? This guy is coming to give us a new religion, one of hate wrapped in peace. All we have to do is get rid of these people and we'll have peace and we'll have prosperity and we'll have stuff.
And then it's these people.
And these people.
And then it's these people.
That's what I'm saying, is that this guy.
And eventually there's no people left.
If this guy had had any virtue of patience, it is terrifying what he actually, even more so than what he did, what he could have done. Charlie Kirk very well one day could have been a future president.
Certainly a nominee.
Absolutely.
100%.
I know he was considering politics at some point.
You know, like, as I told you before we started this, when he was alive, I never listened to a bunch of his stuff just because he leaned a little too much politically for me personally. And I see why. And he was incredibly effective at it. But as he's passed away now, a lot of his clips are obviously circulating online, so I've listened to many more of them. He was just a brilliant man. My goodness, was he smart. Seriously, I don't care what side of the fence you're on. Listen to what he says, and when he debates with people, just the things that he can pull off the top of his head like it's nothing. It blows my mind how brilliant he was. Seriously, at 31 years old.
There was a time when there was a statement out there, we'd say, you know, the patients are running the asylum. And, you know, everyone knew what that meant. And try and say it to a teenager today and see what they say. They don't get it. You know why? We don't have asylums like we used to. They're like, what are you talking about?
No, you're right. We don't. Well, and like on the surface, I would kind of look at like, man, they just institutionalized all these people back in the day. Like, that's probably kind of a problem, right? And then now you see, like, man, it's crazy out here.
Well, we did the opposite. You can argue whatever you want to about the morality of doing that. But then what we did is we just turned them loose in society. And then the craziest part is we said, hey, we started adopting some of their crazy ideas. I mean, literally. It used to be called gender dysphoria. Now it's called a lifestyle.
We didn't come up, we did adopt that, but it's due to passivity that it continues to grow and exist.
What you tolerate, what you celebrate, you become.
Most people genuinely don't want that, they don't agree with it, and they don't support it. Especially not being taught to children. But I also think most people are like, hey, as an adult, what decisions you choose to make is up to you. And that's true. Now you got free will. Just because you can, doesn't mean you should. But where do we then draw that line of saying, hey, you don't have the free will right to do that? And I think it's personally in spaces of like, this does not need to be taught to children. This does not need to be paid for by the taxpayers. And that's just on this issue of like changing sex surgery, right? That shouldn't be paid for by taxpayers.
I don't know. Should it?
Well, why should it?
Why shouldn't it?
Why should the taxpayers fund what you decide you want?
We are. We're also funding the murder of children in the womb.
Well, right. Why would we pay for that?
Because I think the crazies are running the asylum.
But I'm saying that's where we should be able to draw a line and say.
But we can't, Tyler.
We, as a society, are not going to fund this behavior.
You're making my whole point. We have reached a place we can't even articulate why we shouldn't. You know why? The crazies are running the asylum. Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
Tell me how that... I know he's slick, and I know he's likable, and I know he says a lot of things that crazy people love.
It's because a lot of people are out of relationship with God, man.
AOC is scary. Not because she's a Democrat.
I think AOC is kind of an op.
Get to your mic, because you're too quiet.
I said, I think AOC is kind of an op. She feels like a little operational, a little too cuckoo bananas, if you know what I mean. Like kind of put there on purpose to.
We went from clearly they were crazy, putting people in asylums and saying, let's put those people in the driver's seat. We've got people.
Yeah, that's a very dramatic overcorrection from saying, hey, you know what? Maybe as a society, just institutionalizing everyone is not the correct method. Which I would agree with, and not that everybody was being institutionalized, but you get my point. we went from that to, like you just said, like, hey, man, we could probably just let anyone lead the charge. It's no big deal. Who really cares?
People don't understand there's a reason why you have to be a certain age to vote in this country.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, there's a lot of people who think that's an injustice. A three-year-old should be able to vote. Why do we not? Well, we understand something that a three-year-old or even a 16-year-old, and I would argue even an 18-year-old today, doesn't have the capacity to understand.
I would agree.
It's not just that we're letting crazy lead us. We want them to. We're holding up some of the least virtuous people. Get out of crazy. Just saying virtue, morality, values, character. We're putting people, holding people up who are disgusting and saying that is our leader.
Yeah, but I think that's an unfair, broad generalization.
Why?
Because I don't think everybody wants that by any means. And I think that we have been, as a society, very, let's say, busy, distracted, not paying attention for a long time until like 5 years ago. Then quite a few people started paying attention. And then, you know, over the past 5 years, as more and more things happen, more and more people seem to pay attention. Like, I don't think most people really want this, man. I just don't think most people really understand and understood how bad this really was and has really gotten.
One of the complaints I have heard almost every election is the disappointment with the options that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think what we're saying by our disappointment and expressing our disapproval is that I have to vote for one of these idiots.
Yep. But you don't.
If I don't vote, it doesn't matter. One of them.
And listen, gonna win.
Some are more qualified than others. But the sad part is I don't like any of them.
Do you want the blue one?
Yeah. I think right now I got a whole lot of amens out there in digital land. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's my point, is that it used to be the best of us rose to capacities and places.
Sure.
Of leadership.
But now everyone is essentially selected.
I don't even want to take that angle. I'm just simply saying.
But it's true, man. The people who rise to candidacy positions.
Can we agree?
Are selected for them.
The people who are currently leading us are part of the problem.
Well, sure. But so are we.
Because they are not actually capable of giving us a true godly solution. Your secular people are not going to bring you to a godly resolution.
I would say, for one, we're part of the problem, and that many of us have strayed away from our relationship with God, and maybe some of us have never had one to begin with. So, in essence, we're oftentimes more so secular people asking for secular solutions, right? So that's what we get. Comparative to if we became more godly people once again and we followed the standards of the boundaries, we do have the boundaries in place. We just don't follow all the standards. So if we actually upheld those standards, kept to them, I think we would see as a result a natural return to godliness in society, right? But we hold some accountability in that we keep seeking worldly or secular solutions to solve ultimately what are spiritual problems. And we keep counting on the same people who offer the problem to offer us the solution. We keep going back to the same well and wondering why we're thirsty.
Yeah, it people don't understand why it matters where that mystery virus came from. The reason it matters is because you really don't want the medicine from the people who are poisoning you, do you? That's why it matters.
Mm-hmm.
Hospitals are for sick people. I'm trying to give you a construct here that, again, we can agree on. So I was trying to make a case about the insane asylum. You know, for the same reason we're not looking for our next supreme justice to come from the penitentiary, right? We're not like going to the penitentiary and saying, hey, any of you guys want to be a judge one day?
But man, that's just it. We've allowed such divisiveness and chaos to creep into society. We literally have right now a Supreme Court justice who would not give an answer on what a woman was.
Is it because she doesn't know?
Well, clearly not.
Because one of her big things was she's the first black woman who got to be a justice.
Right. So
she knows what a woman is.
Well, yeah. I mean, you were literally honored for being
the first black woman.
The first black woman. Good for you. But then you're going to turn around and say you don't know what a woman is. Like, it's literally you. So my point to that is, man, we've allowed this divisiveness to creep in and grow so out of control that we don't any longer have these just basic 1 + 1 = 2 things we can all agree on.
We can't agree on truth.
Right.
And if you can't agree on truth or even terms, what can you agree on?
Exactly.
Okay, hospitals are for sick people. We can agree on that, right? Hospitals are for sick people. And I've been in some pretty big cities where, you know, the hospital was so big that you could argue at different wings in the hospital, there's a different culture. I mean, it's like, oh, no, our policies here, that's the north side. The south side functions this way. Maybe you could argue they have their own zip codes and area codes. Like, it's just so big. And these giant hospitals, multi-floors, have this wonderful convenience. They're called elevators. You ever been on one? Mm-hmm. An elevator. And if you ever had to walk upstairs, you know the beauty of an elevator. A picture for us. You know, we had a thing, they say, oh, I don't think his elevator goes all the way up. You know, like we talk about that with people, like there's something missing there.
Not playing with a full deck.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's some truth to that. I think that one of our issues is we've all got multiple elevators in our head, okay? There's one of intellectual capacity. There's one of emotional capacity. There's one of virtue capacity and character capacity. There's caring capacity, right?
I actually just have elevator music.
Yeah, I knew you were making a joke. You can't resist. There are more elevators than I can articulate. But here's one of our issues in all these groups instead of having a commonality of love, we have a commonality of hate for the other groups. There are issues of elevators. Some of them are, like I said, it's an issue of right and wrong. Their elevator does not go, it doesn't work all the way. Some people's elevators are out of order. Like, it doesn't work. It doesn't just stop at the fifth floor when there's like still 20 floors left. It's not working. Like the one with empathy and sympathy. There are some people who do not have it. They may score a perfect 36. Is that what it is on the ACT? But they have no intellectual capacity to feel what somebody else does. They can't even try. They don't understand. That's a growing issue. And again, that's fine. You're a human being. You have rights like everybody else does. But when you have a person who can't even try and step in the shoes of somebody else and is making decisions, sometimes there are life and death for the other person.
Just wonder what made him to be that way. What made those people to be like that?
That's a question that RFK is trying to answer right now, and people are saying it's political.
This has been Blindly Obvious. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. Peace, love, and God bless. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. And remember, eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
Past the signs each day, in little things missed along the way, the symbols hidden in glamour's light, blindly obvious, but out of sight. Mystery. The magician's lie, a trick so good you don't ask to you. Can you see it too? Oh, I can see it. The roads lead back to you.